Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
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 Text 28 from chapter 28. Paranjana becomes a woman in his next life.
Tam eva manasa grinan.
Tam eva manasa grinan.
Babhuva pramadhotama.
Babhuva pramadhotama.
Anantaram vidarbhasya.
Anantaram vidarbhasya.
Rajasimhasya veshmani.
Rajasimhasya veshmani.
Tam eva manasa grinan.
Tam eva manasa grinan.
Babhuva pramadhotama.
Babhuva pramadhotama.
Anantaram vidarbhasya.
Anantaram vidarbhasya.
Rajasimhasya veshmani.
Rajasimhasya veshmani.
Tam. Her.
Eva.
Eva.
Certainly.
Manasa.
By the mind.
Grinan.
Grinan.
Accepting.
Accepting.
Babhova.
Became.
Pramada.
Pramada.
Woman.
Woman.
Uttama.
Uttama.
Highly situated.
Highly situated.
Anantaram. After death.
Vidarbhasya.
Of Vidarbha.
Rajasimhasya.
Of the most powerful king.
Veshmani.
At the house. Translation. King Paranjana gave up his body while remembering his wife. And consequently, in his next life, he became a very beautiful and well-situated woman. He took his next birth as the daughter of King Vidarbha, in the very house of the king. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. King Paranjana thought of his wife at the time of death, King Paranjana thought of his wife at the time of death. He attained the body of a woman in his next birth. This verifies the following verse of Bhagavad Gita 8:6. Who knows the verse without looking? Smaran bhavam jajatante kalevaram tam tam evaiti kaunteya sadatad bhava bhavitaha. Translation. Whatever state of being one remembers when he quits his body, that state he will attain without fail. When a living entity is accustomed to think of a particular subject matter or become absorbed in a certain type of thought, he will think of that subject at the time of death. At the time of death, one will think of the subject matter that he has occupied his life, that has occupied his life while he was awake, lightly sleeping or dreaming, or while he was deeply sleeping. After falling from the association of the Supreme Lord, the living entity thus transmigrates from one bodily form to another, according to nature's course, until finally he attains the human form. If he is absorbed in material thoughts and ignorant of spiritual life, and if he does not take shelter under the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Govinda, who solves all questions of birth and death, he will become a woman in his next life, especially if he thinks of his wife. As stated in Srimad Bhagavatam 3:31.1, Karmana daiva netrena. A living entity acts piously and impiously, and sometimes in both ways, All actions are taken into account and the living entity is offered a new body by his superiors. Although King Paranjana was overly attached to his wife, he nonetheless performed many pious fruitive activities. Consequently, although he took the form of a woman, he was given a chance to be the daughter of a powerful king, as confirmed in Bhagavad Gita 6:41. Prapya punya kritam lokan ushitva shashvati sama suchinam shrimatam gehe yoga brashto vijayate. Another famous verse. Translation. The unsuccessful yogi, after many, many births of enjoyment on the planets of the pious living entities, is born into a family of righteous people or into a family of rich aristocracy. If a person falls from the path of bhakti yoga, God realization, due to attachment to fruitive activity, philosophical speculation, or mystic yoga, he's given a chance to take birth in a high and rich family. The higher authorities appointed by the Supreme Personality of Godhead thus render justice to the living entity according to the living entity's desires. Although King Paranjana was overly absorbed in thoughts of his wife and thus became a woman, he took birth in the family of a king due to his previous pious activities. The conclusion is that all our activities are taken into consideration before we are awarded another body. Narada Muni therefore advised Vyasadeva that one should take to Krishna consciousness, devotional service, and abandon all ordinary occupational duties. This advice was also given by Lord Krishna himself. Although a devotee may fall from the path of spiritual consciousness, he will nonetheless attain a human body in the home of a devotee or a rich man. In this way, one can resume his devotional service. Yesterday evening we were discussing Kapila Dev's teaching on specifically the chapter was the process of Ashtanga Yoga mixed in with Bhakti. Ashtanga Yoga is a process of meditation. And it's a rigid discipline that's powerful if one follows it properly, and it's specifically its objective. It says at the beginning of the chapter, it's all of the things that make it up are aimed towards one thing, and that is fixing the mind on the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Very similar to what we find in Nectar of Devotion. There's 64 items of bhakti that are presented, and in summary, Rupa Goswami says all 64 of these and anything else that you might do in devotional service has one purpose. What's that one purpose? Always remember Krishna, never forget Krishna. Same. So the form may be this or that or something else, but the target, the center objective is one thing. Always remember Krishna, never forget Krishna. And then there's the rest of the world. The rest of the world meaning persons that are not regulated. And those that are not regulated may think of so many things. And the so many things then determine the destination of the soul at in one sense, it's after this body is finished, But practically speaking, it's a moment-to-moment situation. Like, we're not in Goloka Vrindavan yet, but we're here, and we're here because of a series of contemplations on sadhana bhakti and receiving instruction from our founder Acharya and so forth. That's the specific advantage of sadhu sangha. Through sadhu sangha, one's thought processes, one's contemplations, one's aspirations and hopes and desires can be transformed. It's a transcendental, transformational process. You know, one of the classic examples scripturally is a caterpillar becomes a butterfly. Prabhupada writes about it right in Bhagavad Gita purport. By contemplating, gee, rather than just crawling around here like a caterpillar, wouldn't it be neat if I could fly? Now, who knows what the mind of what a caterpillar is thinking? But Prabhupada indicates they're thinking, it would be really nice if I could fly. And, in other words, promptings from Supersoul are also there. One can, through scientific or research and technological, you know, this and that, the DNA, and all the, you know, the material, mechanical, cause and effect things. Physical or gross physical phenomena may be studied, which doesn't, you know, those things don't disclude or preclude, or I think the right word is exclude. They don't exclude some subtle features that determine the grosser features. And this verse is saying that the subtle feature of the mind determines the physical or the gross physical features. Because the mind is also material. At least the material mind is material. Then there's the spiritual mind, and the spiritual mind is what's being advocated in devotional service. And as last night, you know, the Sankhya and Ashtanga yoga systems mixed in with bhakti. That's what's being advocated, is spiritualize the mind, or literally dissolve the material mind, leaving the spiritual mind. And once again, that's rare. That's the largest percentage of living entities, as Prabhupada is describing in the purport, having left the association of the personality of Godhead, one comes here, and, you know, then the fun begins. The cycle of birth and death begins. And it's literally endless without intervention. Like, some people have the idea, it's naive, it's not confirmed in the scripture, that's for sure, that, well, one day everyone will go back to God. Krishna says the opposite. Endlessly living entities can be cast into the wombs of mothers according to the guna and karma. Endlessly. Endlessly. It's just even exhausting saying it. I don't think and there's only one person I can think of. Ask the question, would you like to take birth again? There's one devotee, he's not practicing anymore, but he was really excited when he read in Bhagavad Gita this message that Prabhupada is presenting in the purport, that if you just practice devotional service for a while and then you desist, you go to the heavenly planets and you enjoy, like it says, long time, very high standard of enjoyment. And then you come back again and do it again. Maybe. At least you get the opportunity to do it again. He was serious. He was dead serious. I'm putting in my time so I can go to the heavenly planets. So, wow. But that's the only exception that I can think of. Do you want to take birth again? These practicing devotees. So since our practice is like that, we need to know on this side what's the requirement. And on that side, it's not a scare tactic, it's just reality and truth. And the reality and truth is whatever the mind is fixed on, that's where you'll go. So where the mind goes is really important, because that's where you're going to go. It's where the soul goes. Mind's powerful. It's hard to control the mind. Krishna says it. We experience it. But it's possible. It's possible when Krishna helps you. So that's, from our side, Krishna will help if we show him we want help. We're striving consistently, practicing consistently to bring the mind, and this is in the sadhana stage minimally, because the sadhana stage is a stage of cleansing those other contaminations that say, let's go over here and let's do that and let's try this out and try a few other things and on and on. It's endless. So to put a stop to that endless force of material desire requires cleansing desire. So that sadhana is for purification. However successful you are or aren't at remaining concentrated while chanting, try. And keep trying and keep trying and endlessly continue to try. With the understanding, whatever my position is, this is purifying. It's cleansing. Cheto darpana marjanam. It's cleansing the mirror of the mind of all those dirty things. And it's lots of extraneous things that are different. They're foreign to the pure mind. We continue the cleansing process by trying. That's the sadhana stage. So the just stepping back from the particular message here, take three giant steps back. This King Paranjana is an allegorical personality. Prabhupada explains, Bhaktivinoda Thakur explains as well, that the Bhagavatam is history. And it's not fiction. This is an exception. This is a history of Narada visiting a king who was overly attached. He was a pious king, so his over-attachment was to fruitive activities found in the Vedas. He was a Karmakanda fan. His ancestry was that there was devotion there, but he was not just mixed devotion, he was like really on the Karmakanda side. He really liked religious rituals found within the Vedas. He just kind of obsessed with that. So Narada, in order to help that king understand, where does this lead you? He visited the king, King Prachinibari, and he began, at the request of the king, to give this narration of an allegorical king. Come on in. An allegorical king, it turns out, is King Prachinibari. He just has a different name. And at the, you know, without all the three chapters that precede this, because you've been studying them here at the temple, the allegorical king is now kaput. He leaves his body. And being, you know, we can say plus and minus, or there's different feature, prominent features in his consciousness. One, he's really attached to his queen, and he's really attached to pious fruitive activities. So he takes birth as in the body of a woman because he's thinking of woman, and because he's very pious, he takes birth in a pious situation. The daughter of a king. So there are these four, there's many, but four primary symptoms of the fruits of piety. Queen Kunti mentions them in her prayer to Krishna. Good birth, that's this one. Janma. Aishwarya, opulence, that's another one. Being the daughter of a king, there's opulence. Shruta, good education. And Shri, beauty. And then there's the absence of those or the opposite of those, and it's simply a measure of piety, impiety. Good fortune, ill fortune as a direct byproduct of one's piety or impiety. There's others. Prabhupada writes in Nectar Devotion about another example of being involved in legal implication. That's some indication of some unfortunate circumstance in one's previous life. Now in this life, it lands on your head. And it may not have direct bearing on what you do, or you know, the whole world of people that are doing the same thing, and somebody gets in a lawsuit, and all the other people that are doing the same thing, they don't, at least right away. So the guna, the modes of nature, influence the mind. They influence everything. They influence the color that you put on your wall. They influence the types of trees that grow. They influence, you know, everything. Disease or health, they influence everything. Modes of nature. Everything. And we all have a particular mode of nature, or, you know, a combination of the modes of nature and a prominence of this one and a but the presence of the other ones. And material nature, the modes of material nature are moving the material energy, and behind the movements of the modes of nature, there's time. Fascinating topic. The time energy is moving without, say it reverse, without the time energy present, the modes of nature are dormant. They don't do anything. When the time energy is present, it activates the modes of nature, and the modes of nature then act upon the living entity, and then stuff starts to happen. And so we do stuff, physically and subtly, you know, thinking. It's the modes of nature that are influencing the mind, which then determines the body, and determines, you know, what happens to the body, you know, the good fortune, ill fortune, and the whole shebang just keeps moving. Under the force of the time energy. Things come, things stay for some time, things go. And how long they stay and when they come and all of that is in the hands of time. And time is an energy of the Supreme Lord. So he's the remote personality who is, according to where, in simple language, where we direct the mind. This is Canto 4, the same thing as the manner of presentation is quite different when Kapila Dev is speaking, but it's the same message. Fix the mind on the Supreme Lord. And if one doesn't, here's some of the things that can happen. This is two points. This is allegory. So once again, generally speaking, by and large, almost in all circumstances, the Bhagavatam is not allegory. It's not stories to help us understand some lessons of life. It's history. It's fact. Within this factual event, Narada visiting the palace of King Prachinivari, because the king is stuck, he chooses to tell a story, a fiction, an allegory within, you know, to help the king get unstuck. Because after the whole allegory, then he goes back again and says what all the different parts of the allegory. This, the, you know, King Paranjana, that's you. And the queen that you're attached to, or that King Paranjana is attached to, is your material intelligence. And then, you know, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. This, the palace of King Paranjana, that's your body. And the fortress of the way that you get protection, and the serpent within the palace, that's your prana, your life air. And so forth and so on. He gives the whole, you know, he deconstructs the metaphor, or the fiction, the allegorical description of the plight of King. So if you remain attached to matter, then certainly you take birth again, and the type of attachment that you have is going to determine which body. So the pious makes a pious situation, of, you know, prosperous situation, one of the kinds of fruits of piety. At the same time, you become attached to this material or that material, and that also happens, attached. So what to do? Does this mean that in Krishna consciousness, the husband is supposed to be, I don't care, towards my wife? And the wife is supposed to be, I don't care, towards my husband? That would be a big problem. So that's not what it's supposed to be. So what's it supposed to be? Service is what it's supposed to be. The attachment that's natural when one associates with someone, certainly when male and female associate, some attachment is there. It arises. And secondary rasas may also come. Ghastliness and other things. Based upon the primary rasa of conjugal love. But one is supposed to see the other as an arrangement by Krishna to assist one in serving Krishna according to one's psychophysical nature, and this is Krishna's arrangement. This is my opportunity to serve him. And here's a particular spirit soul that provides the opportunity to serve. I and she, or the other way around, he and I, from the female perspective, it's an opportunity to serve. And there's going to be an attachment. Let that attachment be directed towards service to Krishna attachment. It's something like In the next canto, canto 5, in the first chapter, what happens after this is King Prachinibari, he gets it. He gets Narada's message, and he understands I should withdraw from fruitive activities and invest in devotion to the Supreme Lord. The overly attachment that I have for my wife and my material intelligence, I should repose on the personality of Godhead. And so he goes off to the forest and achieves perfection. And his sons, his wonderful Prachinibhari's sons, the Prachetas, they also achieve spiritual perfection. And so there's a break in the lineages of kings from that point. So the next canto begins. Swayambhuva Manu is in a dilemma because we have to have a king here, and there isn't a king. So what he does, Swayambhuva Manu, goes to his elder son Priyavrata. Priyavrata, please become the king. I don't want to become entangled. He doesn't say no. He doesn't say yes. And with many nice things. In addition to Swayambhuva Manu, then Narada Muni comes. And Priyavrata is thinking, ah, this is good. He's a sannyasi. He's going to say, I don't have to get married. Narada Muni doesn't say that. And then Lord Brahma comes. They gang up on him. And Brahma gives him this promise. He said, I know what your concern is. Your concern is, if you become king, you'll have to have a queen. And if you have a queen, you get attached. And then you'll forget all this wonderful spiritual progress that you've made. But I give you this promise or this benediction. Detachment will come, but you'll achieve perfection. So with that assurance of Lord Brahma, he does. And sure enough, canto 5, he accepts the responsibility of becoming king. He gets a wife. He gets attached. But he doesn't forget Krishna. He just gets attached. He doesn't get like super bewildered attached. There's attachment. And then by the protection, because he's doing what he's doing in service with the commitment or the benediction of Lord Brahma that he'll be protected, he's protected and he goes back to Godhead, which was his desire when he left Swayambhuva Manu's palace. So it all ended up very nice. So it doesn't have to be like this. Like Puranjana. One can be in Krishna conscious family life and go back to Godhead. Or one can be in not Krishna conscious life and according to the type of attachment that one has, take another birth according to where the mind is attached to. So it's very important. Prabhupada writes in the 6th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, in any system of yoga, the mind, controlling the mind, where the mind goes, is really important. The Ashtanga yoga system, the Bhakti yoga system, the fruitive activities system, where the mind goes is really important. So part of training and education, we use this phrase a lot in Krishna consciousness, it's training and educating the mind. My dear mind, please go to Krishna. I don't want to go to Krishna. Yes, you do. And even if you don't, go to Krishna. I'm going to rebel. and so on. The attract the all-attractiveness of the all-attractive Krishna, because that's what his name means, the all-attractive Supreme Person, is the best means of spiritual elevation. And therefore, when engaged in our process of devotional service, most important of all is the chanting of the holy name. We should be, the mind should be present with the holy name. And then, when the time of death comes, there is more likely that we'll remember the holy name. The holy name is our place of shelter. Maybe some of you have thought about what's going to happen when the time of death comes. You know, pain, fear, distraction. You know, where's the mind going to go? So the practice now is Krishna is my shelter. So when that, you're on the edge of the cliff looking over and you're starting to fall, where's the mind going to go? What you're attached to? Where your shelter is? Just like the Chinese girl was saying yesterday, the place where you feel safe. When, you know, leaving the body is not, I mean, we've all done it, but we can't remember it. But we're certainly attached to the body. We're certainly attached to the body. And when you're being pulled out of the body, or, you know, you're not going to be around in the body anymore, it's not like just dozing off and going to sleep. It's, you're leaving the body. And the attachment for the body is there. So now, where's your shelter? Because that which the soul is now sheltered in, this body, which we're very attached to, is being taken away. It's not like, you know, your glove chamon or something. It's your body. Hey, what are you doing? Taking my glove chamon. Your body. So where's your shelter? And that's something that we need to practice daily. And according to Srimad Bhagavatam, that's the position of fearlessness. Not just when you leave the body, fearlessness, but all the time, fearlessness. There is a place, there is a consciousness of fearlessness. That's where the shelter of Krishna is there. And minus that, someone may be foolish and not feel fear, but actually, below that, you know, the pretense, no fear. There's fear, because we don't know what's next. I remember very clearly riding on the subway with my godbrother Rupanuga Prabhu, who was my temple president, and we were going to a government office in Queens. I forget exactly what the mission was. It had to do with the registration papers of the corporation, and it was in the records of the government office, something like that. So we're riding from the temple to go to the government office, and we're sitting there in the subway car, and he leaned over and said, they have no idea where they're going. They think, you know, such and such stop, but the reality is they don't know if they're going to make it. And that's life in the material world. We're going on as if la-di-da, but we all know, you know, deep inside, we all know one of the days we get on, you know, get up in the morning, we're not going to, it's over. And we don't know when that is. That's fearful. What the next moment holds, we don't know. And of course, with the darkness of Kali Yuga, without elaborating too much, you know, terrorism and crazy people and guns and violence and this and that, and just innocent people sitting in an office all of a sudden get, you know, blasted. Or whatever. Go to a shopping mall and mowed down. We don't know. Crazy. It's the risk of existence is increasing. The death rate is still 100%. But when it's going to happen is more unknown. So where is our shelter in this fragile situation? It's not, the purpose of this is not to instill fear. It's to come to the position of recognizing this isn't safe. This isn't the place of protection and well-being. We belong somewhere else. And move in that direction. Impetus. Otherwise, the laws of nature rule. And we're just going along on the conveyor belt of life. Things are happening. And then it's kaput, it's over. We can take a positive redirect in the flow of consciousness at least, and then the destination of the soul. That's the conclusion that Narada reaches with King Puccinibari. Don't continue with these fruitive activities and attachment on the platform of the body. Even it may lead you to a heavenly planet and a nice birth or something. Any comments or questions? Yes.
So, in this verse, we have been talking about how to fix the mind, especially at the end of our life. So, my question is, we have natural attraction to our own family. So, it's naturally it comes in our mind.
It naturally comes.
So, we cannot just take it out, and how to...
service to Krishna. Let that family attachment be directed towards pleasing Krishna. Without all the elaboration, that's the principle. Let Krishna be pleased. What do you think?
Is it possible for us to...
Of course! Someone else? Yes?
Maharaj, I have a question from the topic that was discussed yesterday evening, but I didn't attend the class, so maybe you addressed it. So we speak of the yoga ladder, that bhakti yoga is the most supreme form of yoga. But Lord Kapila is recommending Sankhya Yoga. So, is the yoga ladder only applicable in this age?
We did discuss it.
Sorry.
Compliments of Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. He explains chapter 25 is unmixed devotional service. That's the advocacy. That's what he's teaching. And Sankhya 26 and 27, it's Sankhya mixed in with Bhakti. Or take chapter 25 and add some spice. So that, that the purpose of that is so we know where the mind should go to the category of spirit. Over here is the categories of matter. Over here is the categories of spirit. Mind should go over here. It says... elaboration on the bhakti principle through Sankhya. Same as Krishna does in Bhagavad Gita. And then chapter 28, which we spoke from yesterday evening, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says, now this chapter is describing Ashtanga mixed with bhakti. The purpose of that is to come to unmixed bhakti. It's a methodology to fix the mind. How to fix the mind. Ours is just direct. And it's recommended. It's more effective than those. Doesn't mean that we don't do any intellectual work of understanding matter and spirit. We do. We must. But the strength that drives that discrimination capacity is the hearing and chanting the Bhagavad Dharma process in relation to Krishna. Here's a nice example of what I'm expressing. Kapila, in Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's childhood pastimes, he was a teacher of grammar. And after he became initiated, he became, you know, a super ecstatic, enthusiastic devotee. And so he just retaught the grammar by every principle of Sanskrit grammar that one had to learn. It had names of Krishna, which then Jiva Goswami put in the form of a book, where what Lord Chaitanya had taught now was a book. And now that system, according to Jiva Goswami's grammar system, is teaching grammar principles, Sanskrit grammar principles, with names of Krishna. So same. You know, there's he taught, Kapila Dev taught Sankhya, but the objective was bhakti. It helps one get to unmixed devotion. And in Satya Yuga, it was especially effective. People had a certain acumen, an intellect acumen, so they could very clearly understand, easily understand. Although it's very complex. It's to get to the unmixed devotion position.
So even in Satyayuga, Sankhya alone could not take you.
Of course not. Yeah. He taught the Sankhya Yoga system. We generally just say that. He taught the Kapila Dev is known for teaching Sankhya Yoga, period. But that's not all there is to say on the subject. What's the purpose of that Sankhya Yoga? To help one come to unmixed devotion. How? Da 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 da. But then you read, you know, chapters 26 through 28, and then you say, oh, that's up. Something else? Yeah? You have something else? Okay. Anything? Yes?
Ramaj, in this booklet, the verse that's prescribed is that one takes birth and next, if the yoga prashta, if they don't complete the yoga process, they take birth in aristocratic or Brahmana family. Mm. If they're more advanced, Krishna goes on to say that they take birth in the devotee family. And they resume their Krishna consciousness. So Prabhupada also mentioned that. Is it always the case that there has to be an intervention from a devotee in their
yes.
life?
Well,
I was asked this question, that's fine.
There may be remembrance. There may be, the exception is, there may be remembrance from one's previous life, and that's the intervention. But there must be intervention. Descending mercy is required, not love. Without it. Anything else? Yes?
I think you answered this question before. But I want to know that always remember Krishna, never forget. Why do we say that?
Why not?
I mean, always remember also includes.
No. Well, you know, it's a slam dunk. It's not. It's a two-handed slam dunk. The implication of always remember is don't forget. The implication of don't forget is always remember. With an injunction comes a prohibition. So this is the injunction and the prohibition, like, you know, emphasis. Yes?
As you are telling us that we should not really remember Krishna, and we should focus in holy names, as we see any name, it has some form attached. So when we remember Krishna, each time do we have to also simultaneously remember the form?
Or no.
Just the sound.
Sound. Whatever helps you absorb your mind in the sound, do that. The recommendation of Haridas Thakur is sound. And it goes like this. Within the sound is the form. So if one becomes accomplished at absorbing consciousness in the sound, the form will appear. Because it's already there within the sound. It'll appear within the mind. But it's not like, oh, I get it, now there's the sound, and then separately there's the form. No. That's what some people do, and then what happens is attention goes away from the sound. Because they want to, you know, contemplate the form. Whatever helps bringing the mind to the sound, do that. But the process recommended by Haridas is absorb your attention in the sound, and unfolding very naturally is the form will appear, because the form is within the sound, within the name. And then next, the qualities. And then the pastimes. The form of Krishna starts to do things. With other living entities, you know, the spiritual world opens. And one can enter. And the doorway is the sound. Supposing somebody says, nah, I don't like that. I just want to do Lila Smarana. Well, that's not the process that's recommended by Scripture. So one can try to do that, but you know, it's premature, it's imitation. And that's so we don't do premature things or imitation things, we do what the teacher says. But in the teachings of the Scripture, focus on the sound. So supposing I'm, you know, just as a for example, I'm in the temple and I'm chanting before the deities. It's really easy to appreciate how nicely the deities, you know, the mind goes through all that thing, and the sound is kind of back there, or like way back there or something. So there's no harm to chant before the deity, or chant before Tulsi Devi, or chant, you know, chant in the association of devotees, japa or something. And all of those above, the mind should go to the holy name. So that which enhances the mind going to the holy name, that's good. In prayer, praying while calling the holy name, something. Yeah.
Maharaj, there is a sentence in the Prabhupada where Prabhupada mentions, although he took the form of a woman, although he took the form of a woman, he was given birth in the house of a king, as a daughter of a king.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's not necessarily speaking of the class in a lower way, but we know that there are places in our scripture where, or, you know, where Prabhupada would mention something like that. So, you know, for a newer audience, I feel like I understand Prabhupada's
intention
and respect for women, and you know, how he treats men and women on the same platform. But with the college audience or a newer audience, sometimes it's almost like that shuts them off, and then there's like nothing but to penetrate through, because that So in principle, when there is something like that, is it okay to, you know, just like skip over it and then maybe revisit at some point when the heart might be more open to and to a broader perspective? Or
well, yes and no. Prabhupada didn't. He didn't. I mean, he presented Bhagavad Gita to the anti-Vietnamese war group of people, where he's sending Krishna Arjuna off to war. So yes, that can be a challenge. But it's good to be challenged as a presenter of Krishna consciousness. And then, you know, meet the challenge, not like, oh yeah, you're gonna, well, you know, you're not one of those, but with clarity. Here's how that challenging, you know, value challenging message can be properly understood. And if one is clear, not like tough, but, you know, clear. I'm beating the other person down. I'll debate with you. Come on. Well, so not like that, but just with clarity. So then on the other hand, yeah, you know, build a fence around that little devotional creeper and don't let, you know, things that are going to devour or damage that little devotional creeper, especially in its early stages. So that's another approach. So yes and no. Personally, I don't feel comfortable doing that, you know. Don't show them this part of the teaching of Bhagavad Gita because they might get scared away. I mean, you know, like, we had that idea, some had that idea at one time when we were distributing Krishna book. You know, because there's this big picture of Radha and Krishna on the cover. Big silver, you know, wow cover. And then there's Krishna. So, you know, some devotees didn't like showing the cover. Because people would get put off. Would speak of Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So they would want to hide that and, you know, have them just take the book without seeing that or something. I never liked that approach. You know, people will say, who's that? Well, that's God. No. Yes. And then you address it. Why not? You know, anyway. So yes and no. I think we're done. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.